Muhammad Ali is dead. The man considered the greatest boxer of all time died surrounded by his family at a hospital in Phoenix from respiratory problems after decades of Parkinson's. He was 74. Ali enthralled, outraged, and inspired millions in the boxing ring or in front of a microphone.
Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
NPR's Tom Goldman has this remembrance of Muhammad Ali.
October 1960, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali's given name, had won a gold medal at the Rome Olympics that year. Now he wanted more, a professional heavyweight championship. He arrived in Miami to work with legendary trainer Angelo Dundee, who died in 2012. Dundee remembered the first day Clay showed up.
Pounding up the steps of the Fifth Street Gym, and the steps were pretty rickety, you know. All wood. You bounce it up, he said, Angelo, line up all your bums, I'm going to beat them all.
18-year-old Cassius Clay, bounding, fearless, leading with his mouth.
I'm not only a fighter, I'm a poet, I'm a prophet, I'm the resurrector, I'm the savior of the boxing world. If it wasn't for me, the game would be dead.
Young Clay made boxing an art form. He was an original, a heavyweight who didn't move around the ring, he danced. He'd thrill the crowd with his quick scissor step shuffle. On defense, he'd slip and slide, says Dundee, and then flick that jab.
He had a jab that was like a snake. He said, snake lick him, and hit him with the jab, you know, because snake lick him, take him home, lock him up. You know, we had our own expression.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Rumble, young man, rumble. Boxing reporters never had so much fun.
Let me see you close your mouth and just keep it closed.
Well, you know that's impossible.
No, keep it closed.
You know that's impossible. I'm the greatest. And I'm knocking out all bones. And if you get too small, I'll knock you out.
As the mouth roared, the victories started piling up, and all of it prelude to a 1964 battle against the Big Bad Bear, heavyweight champion Sonny Liston. Liston was a fearsome opponent. Nobody gave the young kid a shot.
Liston seems bewildered. He's unable to cope with Clay's sharpshooting.
But after six rounds, Liston was done. He didn't come out for the seventh, and Clay was the new champion.
Hold it. You're not that pretty. I'm a bad man. I shook up the world.
But 22-year-old Cassius Clay was just getting started.
Why do you insist on being called Muhammad Ali now?
That's the name given to me by my leading teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's my original name. That's a black man name. Cassius Clay was my slave name. I'm no longer a slave.
After the Liston fight, Muhammad Ali revealed he was a member of the black separatist movement called Nation of Islam. Its leader, Elijah Muhammad, preached that integration and intermarriage were wrong and white people were devils, an idea Ali defended in a 1971 TV interview.
And I'm going to look at two or three white people who are trying to do right and don't see the other million trying to kill me. I'm not that big of a fool. And I'm not going to deny it. I believe everything he teach. And if the white people of the country are not the devil, then they should prove they're not the devil.
Ali became a polarizing figure in America. Many sports writers vilified him. Black boxer Floyd Patterson said, "I don't believe God put us here to hate one another. Cassius Clay is disgracing himself and the Negro race." To others, Ali became a loud and unapologetic symbol of black pride.
There was a great deal of excitement in seeing that because there was a boldness that many of us did not know.
Reverend Kwasi Thornell from Washington, D.C. was an African-American teenager when Ali burst onto the scene.
We were more encouraged by our parents to, you know, just go along with the system and not be bold and bodacious as Muhammad Ali was.
Ali's boldest move and most controversial came in 1967.
My intention is to box to win a clean fight, but in war, the intention is to kill, 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 and continue killing innocent people.
At the height of the Vietnam War, Ali refused induction into the U.S. military, saying, "I ain't got no quarrel with them Viet Cong." Some called him a traitor. For those in a growing anti-war movement, Ali was a hero who paid a significant price. He was convicted of draft evasion, and although he avoided jail time, he was stripped of his heavyweight title and banned from boxing at the age of 25, just as he was entering his prime. It would be more than 3 years before Ali returned to the ring.
15 and final round.
Referee Arthur McCanny has them touch gloves, something they've been doing all night.
Following his exile, Ali squared off against the late Joe Frazier, who became heavyweight champion in Ali's absence. The March 1971 showdown was billed as the fight of the century. Frazier won, handing Ali his first professional loss. It was also the first of three epic bouts between them. Frazier, with his boxer's mashed face and snorting bull style in the ring, could never equal Ali's finesse and skill as a fighter, nor could he match Ali's wit, which often turned cruel when the subject was Joe Frazier.
"You'll also see why I say he's a gorilla. You'll see how ugly he is and how pretty I am."
It was theater to Ali, but in a 2007 interview, Ali biographer Thomas Hauser said the words and frequent taunts were like broken glass in Frazier's stomach. "It's one of the reasons," said Hauser, "that even late in life, Frazier harbored ill will toward Ali."
"Even though Muhammad said to me that if God ever called him to a holy war, he wanted Joe Frazier fighting beside him."
Undoubtedly, Howard Cosell would have done the Holy Wars play-by-play, as he did for many of Ali's fights. The two men had a symbiotic relationship. Their interview sessions were more like hilarious jousting matches, with Ali needling the pedantic former lawyer, always threatening to tear off Cosell's obvious toupee. These are excerpts from a TV tribute to the two men.
"I'm going to let everybody know that that thing you got on your head is a phony, and it comes from a tail of a pony.
The body is now aging.
You ready?
A shell of what it used to be.
What am I going to do? Yes.
The man's beset by fear. What are you going to do to George for me?"
"He just said the man's body is not what it used to be. The man is beset by fear. Talking about me. Are you crazy? If I had a lower IQ, I could enjoy your interview."
When it came to boxing IQ, none was higher than Ali's. In 1974, against the menacing George Foreman, Ali used a tactic called the rope-a-dope. He stayed on the ropes, covering up, letting Foreman punch himself out. Then Ali struck quickly, knocked out Foreman, and became champion a second time. A year later, the Thrilla in Manila was the final fight in the Ali-Frazier trilogy. It was an awesome and horrible slugfest that ended with Ali winning, but admitting afterwards, it was the closest to death that I could feel.
"This is too painful. It's too much work. Might have a heart attack or something. I want to get up while I'm on top."
It would have been the perfect time to stop, but Ali kept fighting another 6 years. In the early 1980s, he was diagnosed with pugilistic Parkinson's syndrome. His last big public moment came in 1996 when Ali lit the flame at the Atlanta Summer Olympics, shaking, his face frozen by a Parkinson's mask. This was a new generation's image of the man called the greatest of all time. But the sadness was mixed with global love. Muhammad Ali was the rare, perhaps only person who could go anywhere, Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, a marketplace in Latin America, and people would stop and point and smile. In his life, he traveled from a boxer's cruelty to kindness. A man who stood up and shouted out for his principles ultimately embraced the quiet principle of spirituality. But in later years, his words muted by Parkinson's, Ali was asked if he'd do it all over exactly the same, even if he knew in advance how he'd end up. The answer? You bet I would. Tom Goldman, NPR News.